Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We got a really cool show today talking about living with mental illness. Pretty interesting stuff here. You are listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial, and these shows are recorded and archived at KRUU FM.com, and they're recorded and archived at Arden Counseling Center. You could simply go to that website and look them up there, or you could go type in Arden Counseling Center on YouTube and you'll find them there. Basically, check us out. Anyways, this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry, and today's show, as I said, is Living with Mental Illness, and we got a great guest today who's going to read from her book and talk about it, and she's also going to be giving a lecture here in Fairfield, Iowa, that hopefully will be recorded, so if for some reason you're not in Fairfield, Iowa, which everybody on the planet is, aren't they? If you're not in Fairfield, Iowa, then you could watch the YouTube of it someday. All right. So, Kate, tell us about yourself.
Thanks, Dr. Terry. My name's Kate Grace, and I grew up in a family with my mother who had a severe mental illness. And so I wrote a book about that because I wanted to raise awareness around it. And I, as a young adult and as a medium-aged adult, I could never find anything to help me explain or help me with what had happened to me as a child. So Toni Morrison is a writer, and she said, famously, if you're looking for a book to read and you can't find it, it hasn't been written, then go ahead and write it. So that's what I did. I wrote a book about it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So
I used to read stories and books about growing up with an alcoholic parent, growing up with abuse, but nothing actually really suited what happened to me. And it took me a long time, I guess, until I became in my 40s, I guess, before I started to realize that my mother's mental illness and my mother were actually not one and the same. They're actually two sort of separate entities.
That's an interesting thing. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, when you're a child and you're one of your parents in your household does bizarre things and harms you and doesn't act like any other mom that you know, it's hard to, I guess as a child, first of all, it was probably somehow my fault that I was a bad kid. And it was just my mom, and that's just who my mom was. It was only when I got to be a lot older that I realized she had a pretty severe mental illness, and that mental illness, which I call in my book an intruder in our home, was what drove those behaviors. And that actually led to a lot of healing on my part, because until then I did have a lot of self-blame, I guess, and low self-esteem.
So you actually blamed yourself for what your mom was doing?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense as an adult. How does that work as a kid?
Well, I think as a kid, I came to several conclusions in writing the book, but one conclusion that I wrote about was that children in that situation, they have no power. So if you imagine kids in a household, the power is the least with the child in a healthy household. And so when your parent is telling you that you're the reason that she feels bad, you're the reason that she's punishing you, you're the reason that pretty much everything is wrong in her life, you're false, you believe that because she's the powerful person in the household.
But also, you know, I talk about with clients all the time, a lot of us become what I call externally referenced. Our reference point is outside ourselves. And if you think about somebody who's codependent or something, and as a kid, essentially, we grow up codependent, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep.
And so the reference point is out there. And if the person out there, your partner or your mother in this case, or your spouse or your kid or whoever that other is mentally ill, if we're going to use that term, then who am I? And as a kid, you don't have identity. Your identity is still getting formed. So you go, am I crazy? Is this other person crazy? What does crazy mean? Or is this what's normal and everybody else is crazy? Or how would you say it? Because I love how you're talking about this.
Yeah. It's so interesting. But I have come to believe that it was like, if you imagine like an intruder that comes into your house, changes everything around in a bad way. And this intruder just never really leaves. I really never saw my mother very often without the intruder firmly attached to her. And I say the intruder was whispering in her ear and telling her what to do, and that's exactly how it feels now. And even back then all I knew was that nobody else's mom acted like mine.
So you did get that part, so it's like there's something off going on here.
Yeah.
But when you were really, really tiny, I bet you didn't even know that.
No. No, I did not. And I just thought I was a bad kid.
Yeah.
I thought I was a bad person and a bad daughter and a bad kid, and I was, mean. And
so you internalized your mother's reality as being your reality.
To some extent. And then I went further and said, well, my mother doesn't love me, therefore I am unlovable. If my own mother cannot love me, then there is nothing redeeming about me. And that's the truth that I carried into my adulthood.
Yeah, or as we say, the mistake of the intellect, the mistake of your mind saying this is what's real, when it in fact isn't real.
Correct, yeah.
And we all do that all the time.
Yeah, it's a situation because it's reinforced day after day after day.
Yeah, and there's no escape from this. And you're the one trapped in the insane asylum here.
Yeah. Oh, nice way to say it.
But your thought of, the intruder, was the intruder your mom? Was the intruder the craziness in your mom? Was the intruder at some point you?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So I wrote a book about, and I tried to, my mother was quite abusive, but I didn't want it to be a book about my mother being abusive to me. I wanted it to be a book that actually gave sort of snippets of what happened to actually demonstrate the kind of damage that happens to children in that situation, or at least that happened to me. And that's the kind of book that I wrote, short chapters that kind of illustrate.
What's the title of this book again?
It's called Collateral Damage, The Impacts of My Mother's Mental Illness on Me.
And I know we'll probably say this again later, but you're going to actually be in Fairfield, Iowa to give a lecture. You're going to give two, actually, lectures. And one is a Mental Health Alliance and Hope for Life event. That's going to be, I think, at the Library Meeting Room, which is 104 East Adams. And I think it's Friday, October 21st?
First, yep, at 7 p.m.
Okay. I think the lecture is going to start at 7:45, but people could come as early as 7 and help set up and hang out and, give a chat beforehand even.
Yeah, perfect.
And then you'll do something the following day or something? Is that it?
Yeah, Revelations Bookstore in Fairfield is having me come to do a reading and meet the author as well, and that's the next day, Saturday, at 10:30 a.m.
Ooh, how nice. And you're actually from Iowa.
I am from Iowa.
Wow, cool.
I'm from the eastern side of Iowa, so I've been traveling around to your neck of the woods, and it's beautiful there.
Sometimes, yes, it is. Okay, so we won't belabor this point. So if you're interested, we're not promoting it. Just if it's something you're interested in, come check it out. Or like I said, we'll try and have this on the YouTube and some other stuff at some point. But let's get back into this notion of, so you didn't want to make this book, and it's called Collateral Damage. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, because I likened it to actually a bomb dropping.
Mm.
Maybe the bomb targets something or someone, but the people and the things around that bomb are necessarily damaged as well, and which is collateral damage.
And you see yourself as collateral damage at that point? Or,
yes.
But isn't there other collateral damage that happened as well, I'm sure?
Well, yeah, I think the mental illness targeted my mom, and then the people closest to her, which would have been my four siblings and myself and my dad, were probably the most damaged by that mental illness.
And you know what? You could even extend that metaphor and say the collateral damage is then you've got five other people, right, who then go out in the world and, like a disease, infect other people. You and your four siblings have other, or three siblings, have other relationships, right? You work at places, you have friends, you have family, you have intimate relationships. And then they've got to deal with you dealing with the situation. So it's not just you're the damage. It ripples and ripples and ripples. and then feedbacks from a small pond. You drop a large rock in a small pond, and it ripples out and then comes back in and then ripples out again.
Yep. It's a good analogy. I think it's a perfect analogy.
And so the collateral damage, and then that rippling back means that your mother becomes collateral damage to her own collateral damage.
Yep.
If that makes any sense.
It does, because as an older woman, her children really don't have much to do with her, and she's actually puzzled by that. She doesn't really understand it.
Hmm.
I mean, she's got five children, and really none of them have a lot to do with her. Some of us have nothing to do with her, and so I know that she's puzzled and hurt by that, but I don't think she has any idea, very little understanding as to why.
Yeah.
Which is sad. I mean, that's really sad.
Absolutely. So how do you deal with that? I mean, because she essentially has no self-awareness that she's in this big truck driving over people. She doesn't have the awareness of the ripples that this intruder inside her mind is dropping this huge boulder into a tiny little pond and splashing all about, and then it's coming back and impacting her. Because as you are impacted, then systemically, then she's rebounded with her impact. It's kind of like we deal with somebody comes home, a veteran comes home from war with PTSD, and let's say it's a male who comes back. His wife and kids are then affected by what's going on. They go to school. They have other relationships. They get stressed out, and then that stress and their stress, then it re-impacts that veteran who then recreates more drama and more stress in them. So it's a vicious cycle that spirals out.
Yeah. Yeah, look, as an adult, I've really never had a mom. And so in my brain, I can say, well, she was not well, and therefore, you know, I should be able to forge some way forward. But it's the very power that a parent has over us is the power to bind us, but also to destroy us and push us away. And that's to me, that's the crux of parental mental illness with dependent with children, is that, you know, we all say, oh, the relationship between a mother and her children, it's sacred, and you can't even turn on any social media or the television or anything and go a week without hearing how much a mother should love her children. I mean, it's just this message that's reinforced over and over again. And so for me, I've had to realize that that's actually not always true. And in my case, it's just simply not going to happen. And there's some loss around that and some grief around that. And you have to accept it, I think, and that's just the way it is, you know?
Hmm. So what do you... I mean, that to me, that's the hardest part about this, is what do you actually do then at this point? Because she can't change. She can't shift. She's lost in what's going on with her. What do you do?
What I did was I divorced her, I divorced her, I divorced her. You know, I had to make the decision that the toxicity of our relationship and the danger of our relationship was such that I just had nothing more to do with her. I did try. I mean, in the book I talk about when I got married, I sent her an invitation. When I had a baby, I told her she had this beautiful grandchild. And even my wedding day, I was searching the crowd for her, but hoping she wasn't there. It's a really weirdly, strangely, internally inconsistent feeling. And that's the way I still feel. After I wrote the book, my mom doesn't know I wrote the book, because she'd be hurt if she knew that, but I invited her to go to breakfast with me. And when I went, because I came to a lot of understanding as I wrote the book, and when we met for breakfast, like on the way, I was thinking, I'm going to do this, I'm going to say that, I couldn't decide what to wear. And I pulled the car over on the way there and went, oh, my God, I still want her to love me. Like, this is pathetic, Cass. It's pathetic. So I got to the breakfast, and it was very awkward, you know, but I finally said, look, I understand what you went through, and I forgive you for anything that might have happened, and I wish you no ill will. And she spent about 2 solid minutes telling me off that I was a bad person, I was a bad daughter, and I hurt her feelings, and
still replicating the past, still trying to drive home that she's not the one with the problem. You're the one with the problem.
I caused all her pain. And so I just let her do it. And it was the first time in my whole life, at the age of 52, that I sat back and went, this is okay. This is the best she can do. But when she got out done, I said, do you mean when I was a kid? And she said, that's exactly what I mean. Well, I'm 52 years old, so it's been a long time since all those little...
No. But you're not.
I know.
She's still you're still in her mind frozen, and part of you got frozen as being that little kid.
Yeah.
And that pain, you know, that's an incredible story. By the way, you are listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial, Mental Health Matters. We are doing a great, great interview with a wonderful person. Tell us about what the book is again and what you're doing.
So the book is called Collateral Damage, The Impact of My Mother's Mental Illness on Me. And I wrote the book for several reasons, but one was to raise awareness around parental mental illness on children and even on adult children.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be research around it.
Absolutely. Especially...
We have some strategies that are fact-based and evidence-based going forward for teachers, for mental health professionals, for families, for relatives, anybody that's involved with mental illness in a parent. And the statistics are kind of alarming. Apparently, 68% of women who seek mental health services have dependent children at home, and 57% of men. That's a lot of little kids that are still affected by this stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't disappear. It never disappears unless you allow it to heal. It's kind of like, and I love how you said you divorced your mom, essentially.
Yeah.
I was talking to a couple earlier, and I was going... You know, you ever have one of these things where you see couples that have been divorced 20 years and they're still blaming their ex for all their problems?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and it's like the ex isn't there. And it's not about forgiving the ex. It's about forgiving yourself for allowing that pain to come into your life even when you had no choice. Because we still, as you did, blame yourself. You attack yourself. And the forgiveness isn't of your mother. It's forgiveness of that little girl who didn't have a choice, who is trapped there.
Yep. And realizing that it was never my fault. I was never a bad person.
No, of course not. No, and nobody is. You know, nobody starts off and says, I want to be a bad person. We just get trapped there, and then it's like that's what becomes the new normal. And it's like, how do we get out of that space? How do we create a new reality? And so I so commend you for doing that, but not only doing that, but taking the vision of that pain and the torture you went through as a means to help others. And that's where we get our power and control back. And that's why I tell everybody all the time, our power and control comes back to us from us being able to make a difference in the world and having a purpose and having a sense of creating something more with that. And maybe it's directly like what you're doing or what I try and do, or maybe it's through art or music, or maybe it's just being a decent person in this world. It doesn't matter what you do. The important thing is to do something. And so I so commend you for doing something so powerful.
Well, it's been really interesting because the people that have come forward who've read the book, I've met so many wonderful people who all said what I felt, which is that I was very isolated in that. I never thought anybody else, nobody around me had the childhood I had except my siblings.
Mm.
And we all, I mean, that's another issue, but my siblings fled, and we really have very little to do with each other because of our shared memories and our shared bond, which is so painful. We remind each other of what we went through, so we just have nothing to do with one another. And for me, that's as an adult, that's the most painful loss of the whole thing. It's just as an adult that that's become really painful. And it's my issue to work out, not theirs, but it's a very difficult thing for me to deal with.
So how do you heal that? Without me going into being in therapist mode, how would you heal it?
Yeah, I think for what I have to do is to acknowledge that there's pain.
Yeah.
There's that it's their pain, not mine. I can't fix their pain.
Right, and that's true.
Unless they actually want to acknowledge it and work on it. This is just the way it is. I remind them too much of what happened, and they don't want anything to do with me. And I guess in my
mind, because they don't want to have to deal with that part of themselves. It's not you we project onto somebody else.
Yeah, and I don't want to cause them more pain, and that's the way I in my mind, I say, well, I would never want to harm my siblings, and if being around them harms them, then it's a no-brainer. I won't be around them, you know.
But you give them the opportunity to, you know, it could take a lifetime, it could take 10 lifetimes, it could take whatever, or it could take a moment in time where somebody transcends their past and says, I'm ready now, this moment, I'm finally ready.
Right. I mean, my brother is older than me, and then there's three younger sisters, and my brother and I, we have a tenuous relationship. We get along most of the time really well, and then other times he just can't handle it. And I understand that now. It's painful when it happens. Because I get lulled into this sense that, oh, gosh, I've got this great brother. And then, you know, it'll flare up, and then I'm on the outs again for a while. So I just keep communication open with all of them. That's all I can do. And live in hope and also in reality, I guess, if that makes sense.
Well, the other healthy thing, if I could say to you, to model to other people that are listening, that you did is that codependency, as I talked about as a child, where the reference point is outside yourself and you get lost in the other, you know, you're not doing that now. You're not here to rescue or caretake somebody else. Again, it's not that you don't love somebody. You know, the old therapist joke is, when the mask falls from the plane, who do you put it on first? Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And you would say, and the joke that I would say, and you would answer, how would you answer that?
I put it on myself first, and then the people around me.
And then, but I would joke with you as a therapist, and I'd say, what, don't you love your kids? Why would you put it on you first? Right? And you go,
but I'm no good if I'm unconscious.
That's right. And then the kid throws off his mask, and both of you are gone. The point is that we have to take care of ourselves. That doesn't mean, like some politician, we go into being narcissistic, and we won't talk about clinical definitions of politicians, which we could certainly go into. But I know that's just so fun. But it's just, the notion is, you could become self-referenced to the point of being narcissistic. The point is to learn how to be self-referential in a positive, productive way in a relative frame of reference. So it means that I could connect to me while I'm connecting to others and not get lost in the others or get lost in myself. It's really about that sense of getting lost. And again, your sense of, I have the open arms to my siblings, even to my mother if she was healthy enough to do it, but she's not. Because it doesn't sound like she's really ready or able or has the proper treatment to ever gotten healed from what's going on with her.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there, and it is, so her illness, her mental illness, and I think, you know, we're going to do more than one of these shows. And so you'll have a chance on further broadcast to hear Kate read from her book. Will you promise us that you'll do that for us, Kate?
I promise. Thank you so much. That'd be great. I promise.
Okay. So on our next show, we promise we'll do some more reading. But in other, you know, her mental illness is bipolar. Is that what you said it was?
I didn't actually ever say in the book.
Oh.
I wanted to be a book about that mental illness causing that, but she was schizophrenic.
Oh, she was schizophrenic. Okay. So that means she has psychosis and she's seeing things. So it's way more than just simple bipolar. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Lots of paranoia.
And part of the problem with that is there's, with serious psychosis, you know, again, let me be the therapist for a second. It's not an easy answer. Because it does mean taking the medications. And the medications are often uncomfortable with side effects that people don't like. And they're not the greatest. But the alternative means living a life of torture for yourself and all those around you that you want to love. And so the medication is the much better, much, much better of two evils. And no, it's not perfect. We don't live in a black and white world. We live in a world that we live in, and we're growing every day, and things are getting better. And there really are much better medicines that are out and much better ways to treat it. And then if somebody could become stabilized on the medications and allow that to happen, for anybody who's listening, there are answers out there. And you might have to seek a little bit, but there are answers. And then we start learning, okay, now that I could settle down the nervous system a little bit and settle my brain out, oh, now I could learn some of the cognitive or behavioral techniques or whatever it is to take more a control over my life and help those around me and to get out of guilt and shame and judgment and remorse and go, it's time for healing for everybody. Let me lead the way.
And it's so worth it. That's what I would say. I would add to that. It's just so worth it to take that course if you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes that's hard to see when you're mired in it. I think for someone with a mental illness, and I talk about it being like a battle inside someone, where you have very few tools and there's not a lot of ways out of it. But what I would say to anybody listening who is in that situation is just realize that on the other side of that, even though it might feel difficult, getting on the other side is its own reward. It really is.
Lovely. Yeah. Yeah. And I love how you said that. And it'll be interesting. Have you written other books, by the way?
I'm writing a novel, but no, this is the first book I've published. I've written a lot of poetry, and there's quite a bit of poetry in the book. I love poetry.
I can see that. I mean, the way you describe your language is so rich, by the way. It's beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, no, and like even your description of being strong enough to want to heal, and that it really is worth it to go to that other side. So anybody who's listening with any difficulty, regardless of if it's something as serious as having some psychosis, to just, you know, your relationship isn't quite what it needs to be, have the strength, have the courage to let go of the fear enough, because that's our trap, is we get so complacent in our fear, so trapped in our fear that would rather be afraid. We'd rather, you know, have things not as great as we'd like, you know?
Yeah.
And things can get better. And yes, life takes a little bit of work. Okay.
It does. Yes, it does.
You know, but it can be better. So let's make it better.
Yeah.
So anyways, sorry to go off on that tangent, but I was just so impressed here. So thank you. So tell us again about the book. Tell us about the talks. And, you know, again, if you're so interested to want to listen to the radio shows in the past, we'll try and put this one up on the Art and Counseling Center's YouTube channel and website and all that kind of stuff. And they could also, of course, reach out to you. How can they reach out to you if they want more information?
Well, the book's available on Amazon, Kate Grace Collateral Damage. If you just type in those words, Kate with a C, Grace like the word grace, Collateral Damage. You can also email me at kategrace2@gmail.com. So kategrace2, one word, @gmail.com. And I will be at Revelations on the Saturday, and I'll also be at the Fairfield Public Library on Friday the 21st. I hope people can come. It would be great.
So Friday the 21st will be the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance and Hope for Life event. And doors open around 7:15. And the event will start around 7:45, 8 o'clock somewhere. And again, it's, you know, if it works for you to want to find out more information, we're not trying to sell anybody on anything here. It's just allow somebody's journey of transformation, and that's what we're talking about, to say to yourselves, I can do this too.
Yeah, if I can do it, you can do it. That's what I'd say. If I can do it, you can do it.
All right, and at that, we'll say goodbye. Thank you so much, Kate. It was wonderful talking to you today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Scott. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.